All right, here's an audio version of my recent Substack post, Thermodynamics, Born of War. Looking back at the history of ideas, it's often easy to judge the extent to which a given idea has been fruitful, true, or otherwise revolutionary. This is obvious only with hindsight. At the time of an idea's genesis, it is only sometimes the case that its profundity is recognized. Often, years pass before the idea is appreciated and its creator respected for his or her insight. Such was the case for Sadie Carnot, now known as the father of thermodynamics, the science of the relationships between heat, temperature, matter, and motion. He never lived to witness his brainchild's role in the history of science. Sadie Carnot's father, Lazare Carnot, a brilliant mathematician and engineer in his own right, had a lively political career in French politics that began alongside the French Revolution in 1789. By 1795, he became one of the most prominent members of the Directory and was the only member of the Directory to have supported Napoleon during these final years of the 18th century. By 1800, Napoleon selected Lazare to serve as his Minister of War. 9 years later, in the service of Napoleon, Lazare theorized about how the emperor could better engineer his fortification systems. Following the fall of Napoleon in 1815, Lazare was banished from France, never to return in his lifetime. Born only 1 year into his father's swerving political trajectory, Sadie witnessed the entire rise and fall of his father's star. The two were close. Even after Lazare's exile, he encouraged his son's burning wonder about the workings of the natural world. Napoleon's downfall was personal for Sadie, then just entering manhood. His family's name was tarnished, and his beloved father was cast away, now living in Germany. Sadie felt that Napoleon's defeat was at least in part because of England's more efficient steam engines, which yielded a non-trivial advantage in war. Ever loyal to both his father and his country, Sadie endeavored to improve the steam engine. Steam engines were still a relatively new technology in the 1820s, and they were woefully inefficient at the time. An efficiency of 5% would have been rare. Despite their wide-ranging applications to tasks such as forging iron, weaving cloth, and draining water from mines. A steam engine provides useful work by channeling the heat from burning coal towards water, which then boils into steam that powers the technology at hand, for instance, to power a locomotive. Here, efficiency is defined as the amount of purposeful work that can be converted from a given amount of heat. Carnot set out to understand whether or not there was a limit to how efficient an engine could be, and also whether or not steam engines could be improved by replacing steam with a different medium. Carnot's brilliant stroke was to abstract away any specifics about the steam engine and to imagine only an idealized engine. Then, whatever conclusions he deduced for such a generic engine would apply to all engines that could conceivably be built. This technique of ignoring the specifics of a device in order to better understand universal principles about the operations of the entire family of all such devices is taken for granted now, but in the 1800s, it was still a relatively new scientific strategy. Now known as the Carnot engine, this idealized engine allowed Carnot to see clearly how heat, temperature, and work relate to each other during the device's operation. The Carnot engine is imagined to be connected to two heat reservoirs of different temperatures. Such an abstraction allowed Carnot to recognize that an engine is a device that requires an input, which is heat, in order to deliver a desired output, which is work. With only rudimentary mathematics, Carnot deduced a number of conclusions that answered the questions he'd asked himself. It turned out that the maximum work output of an engine is related to the amount by which the temperatures in the reservoirs differed. The greater the gap between their temperatures, the greater the maximum possible work done by the engine. Carnot also showed that it doesn't matter which substance one uses to convert heat into work. Steam works just as well as any other substance, provided the substance is capable of transferring the heat in the first place. Once again, what matters is the temperature difference that the heat engine faces. Finally, Carnot introduced concepts that would prove to be foundational for both the science of thermodynamics and also its applications. The Carnot engine is a cycle, since it can convert heat into work over and over again. At the time of Carnot's revolutionary work, a popular idea among scientists was the so-called caloric theory of heat, which asserted that heat was a fluid that was somehow transferred between objects. We now know that heat is just a form of energy, and not a physical substance unto itself, like smoke or water. But Carnot was not afforded the knowledge we have today, and he seemed to have accepted the caloric theory. Despite holding a false view on the nature of heat, he nevertheless deduced conclusions about heat, work, and temperature that we regard as true to this day. No scientific journal accepted Carnot's writings on engines, and so in 1824, only in his late 20s, he self-published a book on the matter called Reflections on the Motive Power of Fire. It received all of one reference in his remaining lifetime. Not long after his publication of Reflections, Carnot's physical and mental health declined until he was sent to a private asylum. He died of cholera shortly thereafter at the young age of 36. Due to the contagious nature of this disease, much of Carnot's work was buried with him, never to be rediscovered. Whatever other ideas he may have had are forever lost to us. Carnot's genius was vindicated only 15 or so years following his death, when physicists Sir William Thomson and Rudolf Clausius discovered the ideas and reflections and built upon them to establish a full-fledged theory of thermodynamics. Their framework revealed some of Carnot's ideas to in fact be ironclad laws of nature, not merely whimsical thoughts of a young, unknown scientist. And in practical terms, Rudolf Diesel invented his diesel engine by directly employing Carnot's notions about idealized engines and their conversion of heat into work, only a few decades after Carnot's death. Since then, any number of inventions rely on Carnot's work, and thermodynamics more generally, including refrigerators, turbines, locomotives, and heat pumps. How was Carnot able to take the leap from improving some particular steam engine to discovering answers about heat engines in general? After all, this genius step may have seemed alien for a society that was still reeling from the Enlightenment, which could explain Carnot's obscurity during his brief lifetime. But Carnot had studied a vast array of subjects, curious about the underpinnings of all of them. As his brother wrote, Sadie visited the workshops with eager interest and made himself familiar with the processes of manufacture, mathematical sciences, natural history, industrial art, political economy. All these he cultivated with equal ardor. In these things, Sadie acquired a superiority which astonished specialists, for the satisfaction of his own mind was the only aim that he sought. In seeking to understand seemingly disconnected fields, Carnot must have developed an ability to abstract away the particulars of a given problem and pinpoint only the relevant components. On the other hand, Sadie's father had been applying similar abstraction techniques to engineering problems before his son was even born, and it could be that Sadie simply adopted the methods of his father and took them to ever greater heights. Scientists usually stand on the shoulders of giants, as the saying goes, but in this case, the shoulders on which Sadie Carnot was standing literally belonged to his father. And if Thomson and Clausius were able to appreciate the contributions of Carnot years after his book's publication, why could no one else do so while he was alive? Here, a few factors were at work. Social skills matter, even in science, and Carnot was known to be quite introverted. He seemed to have been more interested in catering to his insatiable appetite for understanding the workings of nature than in advertising his groundbreaking research to his peers. In addition to Carnot's lackluster marketing efforts, his results in Reflections, his book, were neither as mathematically rigorous nor as corroborated by experiment as they might have been. Both are tasks that he may have pursued had he lived. Only after an acquaintance of Carnot reworked both the style and mathematics of Carnot's book, Reflections, did other scientists start to take the work seriously. Carnot died in the midst of disease and delirium, having never known how revolutionary his ideas would come to be. But he must have taken some solace in knowing that he'd accomplished what he'd set out to do, even though he did not witness the resurrection of his family name. Ultimately, Carnot brought to his family's name a permanent honor beyond anything his father had achieved. We can never know at the time of an idea's birth how far it will take civilization. Carnot never lived to see his genius vindicated, but his spirit lives on in the literal engines of civilization.